What's up, humans? Welcome to the Human Music Podcast. I'm Luke Rain. My co-hosts are Tesco and Rip Kinney, and we are all music producers, artists, and producer coaches. This show is where we discuss all things music production and interview amazing creatives about their origins, their process, and whatever else comes up. This week is episode 122, Kellen on Creating a Vibe with Music. Kellen is a producer, vocalist, and songwriter from Seattle, Washington. We had him on to talk about his origins as a percussionist, getting into production with an old version of Cubase, why he switched to Ableton, the evolution of his musical taste and style, getting into the beat battle scene, which of his songs are his favorites, his approach to writing lyrics, creating a vibe, letting go of perfectionism, and the importance of authenticity. The song of the week is Kellen, Misery Loves Company. You can hear that behind me. Links down below in the description. And you can check it out on the Human Music Song of the Week Spotify playlist. Link to that too. Make sure to support our sponsors. You want to spice up your percussion sounds? Get the Spice It Up Percussion and Foley Pack by Luke and Porch. Yo, that's my pack. It's got over 2,000 loops and one-shots from like regular-ass normal shakers and hand drums and things, all the way over to some crazy instruments like a cup full of coins and mouth noises and all sorts of fun shit. Even got some lyrics in there, some words. Tesco's Patreon, where you can check out his educational content, his Discord, track feedback, private lessons, and more. Dojo TV, where you can get free producer live stream classes from the Dojo Senseis. The weekly download, where you can learn from Ill Gates and his private weekly group lessons and get access to over 250 more episodes in the archive for just $20 a month. And guest practices, where you can learn from Seth Drake at the Approach Institute. He's the best engineer we know, and your first class is free. Get access to our socials, different streaming sites, all our sponsors over at thehumanmusicpodcast.com. Now let's get on into this episode with Kellen.
Hello, people of Earth. This is Tesco with Rip Kenny and Trap Jesus, and you're listening to the Human Music Podcast. Woo!
Human Music Podcast. I like it.
Are there any rules as far as like cursing goes or what we talk about, or is
fuck
it off limits? No.
A fuck has to be inserted in every sentence.
Okay. I swear like a sailor, yeah. So like I'd be really surprised if you swear less than me or swear more than me. And so like just speak how you'd speak.
Okay, sounds good.
Just talk it out.
Pretty casual atmosphere in here.
Yeah, man. And I get it started like, what's up, humans? Welcome to the Human Woo. Music Podcast.
Woo! Let's go.
Hey.
We back.
Back Whing. With you, doing it again, week by week, interviewing dope-ass creatives. And this week, I'm excited. I'm excited every week, y'all know me, but I'm excited this week because we got my dude Kellen on. What's up, Kellen?
Let's
Welcome
go.
To the podcast.
Oh my God, I'm gonna fucking go.
I've known Kellen a few years now. We met through a beat battle scene in Seattle, Washington. And, you know, I want to just start off by letting us and our audience get to know Kellen better. So we're going to start it off with the same question we ask every guest. Kellen, what is your superhero origin story? How did you become the amazing creative that you are today?
Oh, man.
Take it away.
I fell into a vat of acid and just got all these superpowers.
Swag.
I grew up, with parents who were always trying to embrace like, you know, creative sides or sports sides. I was terrible at sports, but I found my niche playing drums when I was 10 years old. So I got lessons for a few years in that. Did a little bit of band in high school, started playing a little bit of guitar and piano in high school. And then I got like my first audio interface when I was 16. It was a Lexicon Omega, really kind of one of those plastic kind of cheaper ones, but I loved it. And I recorded a lot there. And ever since then, I was just recording, writing music left and right and just trying to polish my sound. So that's kind of how it all started. And now I'm here.
Did you play any like instruments or anything other than the drums in high school? Did you play in like jazz band or anything?
So I didn't play in jazz band, but I was in the percussion ensemble. So I started playing drum set when I was 10. And then once I got to high school, I started getting into everything from drum line to percussion ensemble. So I learned everything from mallets to, you know, the tubular bells to, you know, the big concert drums, a timpani, all that good stuff. And then I was also in drum line back then, where on 3 different years, I was bass drum, and then I played snare, and then I was toms. So I got a little taste of everything.
That's what's up. What
kind of music were you into at the time?
I was straight up, like, almost until the end of high school, I was into like pop punk rock.
Fuck yeah.
Almost like exclusively. Sick. And it's actually really funny how I got into hip hop, because it's because when I got that Lexicon Omega, I recorded myself singing, and I quickly figured out I'm a terrible singer. And around that same time, I started hanging out with the crew, and I started smoking weed at the time, and they played a lot of hip hop. And so I kind of got into that. And that kind of led me down this rabbit hole of this giant hip hop, umbrella of a genre that I really sunk my teeth into. And then I started rapping and making beats when I was 17.
There you go.
Dope.
And so what were you making beats in at 17?
I was making it in Cubase.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not the answer.
Which version were you on?
I was Cubase 5.
5. Yeah.
Let's go.
Look at you guys.
Yeah.
That was like, it was just like, I don't know if it was a golden era per se of that, but like for me it was, you know, so I'm glad we share that.
Is that just nostalgia, or do you actually think the program functioned well back then?
Okay. I've grown to hate Cubase since. It's full of bugs.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if they're a sponsor for your guys' show.
Not yet, but
not anymore. Eventually, a new sponsorship.
Yeah, you can scrub that out.
We don't edit shit, son.
back then it was fine though. And then I finally got into making beats and get into VSTs and stuff like that, which Cubase was fine for the time. Yeah. And then finally I made the switch to Ableton. Actually pretty late in the game. I'd been recording probably 4 or 5 years, and I was finally like, I hate this stuff. It keeps crashing on me and I keep losing so much work.
Dude, there's nothing worse than crashes. Not only is it like just annoying, but like if you have to do work over, like your creative flow is just like, it's not happening.
That was it. It was the flow stopped. And then I'd have to restart my computer, which would take 10 fucking minutes because I had a shitty computer back then.
Of course.
And then I'd have to go and reload the project and realize, oh my God, I lost like 2 hours of the most tedious work. I've lost my flow. And that's why I eventually moved to Ableton, because it's just like it rarely, if ever, crashes.
Yeah. Really?
Interesting.
What version are you on? Because I need that shit.
Because I've heard that shit called Unstableton.
Oh really?
Bro,
no, mine like does really well.
It literally
the
depends
backup
on...
system is awesome.
Yeah.
So thankfully, I've never lost anything significant. But like, damn,
it definitely does crash sometimes. But like you said, the backup system keeps it in check, which I've learned the hard way. But it definitely, I mean, even on my newest computer, when I'd swap back to like the newest Cubase just to do some tracking before Ableton got the multi-track lanes. It would just crash all the fucking time, and I could not stand it. So when Ableton 11 finally got the tracking and comping feature, I was just like, fuck it. I'm just using this from now on.
Well, dude, straight up, literally the only reason that like I still have my computer. So it's like, you know, it's like 5 years old by now, but it was, you know, it was like pretty much the best spec of iMac I could get back in like 2017 now, I guess. But I still have my operating system on 10.12 High Sierra and like literally Ableton Live 10, even though comping would be so much better. That build combination on this machine is so stable that I was like, until I'm done with the album, I'm not doing fucking jack shit to it, because it just fucking works.
Mm-hmm.
Additional features be damned. It does really fucking matter.
Evan, I'm not going to lie, bro. I'll have a crash every 15 minutes to have comping. No, way I'm giving up comping.
No, you wouldn't. No,
yeah,
you wouldn't.
I would.
No,
yeah, I would. Well, you got to make that switch.
I know I do, but at least I fucking finished the album, right?
Yeah.
Let's go. Right, right. Amen. Let's go, baby.
Yeah, I refuse to upgrade from Mojave. I'm just like, I'm not risking anything.
Yeah. Yeah, once you find that build, if there's nothing that you like absolutely need, like critically in the process, it ain't worth it.
Especially when it's an OS upgrade. Like, since when did an OS upgrade ever? Like, I mean, when you upgrade your DAW, it's like, oh shit, new features. But upgrading your OS, it's like same shit, new bugs.
Dude, yeah. And literally, so like your computer, the build of your hardware is like synced up to work with the older operating systems, right? Like no further than like maybe two or three past your hardware. And like, it's not worth it. By the time you need a new computer, like that, then your operating system starts getting phased out for updates and new shit, which is literally where I'm at right now. And this computer is absolutely starting to shit the bed.
Yeah.
And so a new computer's on the docket, but, yeah, if you don't have to, don't update your operating system on Mac, at least, until you start running out of that usability.
Yep. Window. No, I'm with you there. Mac is like, I love Mac, but it's so finicky. It's like, I ain't going to trust any new features.
Yeah.
What's up, PC gang? We get to have our own problems. Totally different set.
Oh, man. Technology. It's like pretty crazy how it works. Can only complain so much, but
yeah, you know, every time
the problems are real sometimes.
Every time I'm complaining, I'm like, oh right, but this is also like straight magic that couldn't have happened it a is. Couple of decades ago, and magic. Everything I do in my art would have been impossible. Okay, I guess I'll take a crash or two.
Yeah.
So how long you been on Ableton now then?
Let me think. I think I started on Ableton 7 years ago now. Oh, sure. Maybe 6 years ago. It was around the time when I met Luke. So maybe 5 years ago. I'm not sure. But yeah, I was still kind of, you know, walking that tightrope between Cubase and Ableton. And, you know, of course, I got a pirated version of Ableton because I wasn't about to spend $1,000 on
allegedly.
It.
Allegedly.
Yeah, try it out.
Yeah, you got to make the demo. You got a demo. Yeah. It doesn't matter how you got the demo.
Yeah,
you got
a demo.
Yeah, of course.
Right. I made a mistake there. Yeah.
I love how technical this conversation is, and this question specifically that I'm about to ask you. How has working in Ableton changed your musical output, if at all, compared to Cubase? Or would you say it didn't?
Well, I think that the biggest thing was that how high quality Ableton stock plugins are compared to Cubase, and the workflow between how you can link all the tracks together, and especially all the MIDI and Max for Live devices that you can use and do just some crazy shit with it. You know, and the amount of flexibility it has. But I just honestly, I think the biggest thing I love the most is the interface. It is so simple. It was really easy to pick up, and they keep it. You know, with Cubase, there's just a million windows that you'd have to pop up.
Mm.
And it's gotten better in the newer editions, but Ableton keeps it really, really simple. And all the stock plugins are like, they can do pretty much anything you really want, you know, if you know how to use them well enough.
Yeah, and you can stack them together with racks and stuff to get, you know, an effect that, you know, you'd have to pay for a plugin. Actually, it's pretty funny. Sometimes out of just like sheer laziness or like, I know for like the fact that I know if I put a fab filter on there and do something, my tendency to want to open up another window to like in my workflow is like there is a tiny bit of friction there. It's almost nothing, but it exists.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll like, if I don't need a fab filter, even though if in a given situation, it might be like 10% better to use it for the accuracy, I'll just use the Ableton stock one because I know if I click on the track, I'll see it and know what I did rather than like assuming I know like, oh, that fab filter is just a low cut and then like forgetting that I also did a mid dip and then I'm like boosting stuff later. And like by the time you get like 3 fab filters on the track because you don't know what you're doing, then I forget like the second one is completely fucking what I'm doing. It's funny how that works. So you're talking about like the windows, like that is totally a thing. If you can see everything just succinctly, It's way better.
Yeah, it's just a really nice workflow engine that they've got going on. That's really worked with me. So I don't know. It just doesn't break as much as, you know, I'm only comparing this to Cubase. You know, Luke, I know you work in Reason and you love that.
I do, but I think indeed. I think it's just glaring hole of no VST3.
Oh, really?
Still?
Well,
most things are on VST normal anyway.
Really? Damn.
Yeah. It is silly. It is.
Dude, VST3, like, you know, I would never actually say that it matters, except for the fact that VST3 has that, at least in Ableton, as I've never used anything else, but it has like the little drop down right next to it where you can put a sidechain input.
Yeah.
And for certain plugins, like that saves like 2-3 minutes.
Yeah, no, that is exactly it. There's like so many cool plugins that talk to each other inside the DAW with VST3, and just, I mean, Reason was like a million years late to VST in general. And at least they skipped right to VST2. But then, you know, VST3 was already out by the time they did that. And they've actually been like, since last year, like, okay, VST3 is coming. All right, cool. And like, we think it's going to drop in September, December, January, February, May, June. here we are pushing September. And it's like, come on, fam. It's been a whole year of lies.
Luke, I got to be honest. This isn't a podcast. This is an intervention.
You gotta switch it up, man.
I have a copy of Ableton 10 that I got for free through the dojo when they were giving people demos or not demos like full versions. And so I have that. That's sweet. I've technically used it. Only for mashups, though.
But, I mean, that's the thing, though. Like, workflow is king. If your workflow is dialed in what you use, like, it really doesn't matter so much as long as it doesn't crash all the time.
Yeah. I work at a million miles an hour in Reason and Ableton. I'm like, every 2 seconds, I have to stop and like, Google what that shortcut key is.
Yeah, you're like a preschooler trying to figure out, like, times tables. Yeah. Like, that's two grades ahead of you. Like, you're going to go slow.
Yeah.
So... Kellen, talk us through like what kind of music you were making when you were just starting out, and like walk us all the way up to what kind of music you're making nowadays.
For sure. I mean, like I would, like I said before, I was really into like, you know, pop, punk rock. So like I was really influenced from back like when I was like 15, 16, I started like writing music on the guitar, piano, by like Blink-182, Death Cab for Cutie, Fall Out Boy, Weezer, The White Stripes. So I did a lot of that kind of style of music where I would like, you know, I had my guitar, my electric guitar, my shitty little amp. And I had like one microphone that I got like for Christmas. And I just like, I'd spend so many hours in the basement just playing nonstop, trying to get it perfectly. Cause back then I was like, I refuse to quantize. I have to play it perfectly like the professionals. Little did I know that's not how they do it at all. But
they're cheating the whole way. They got like another dude. Rules. Dude, literally, Nicola, you were just telling me the other day how I forget what band it was, but you were saying like this, they were recording and like they had another dude standing over the top of him to like mute the strings when he was doing like a difficult. Oh, yeah. Like part like up the strings that like you couldn't really contort your hand to like mute everything while they were playing. It's like if you just expected that you could do everything that you hear in a studio recording, like just straight up, you're never gonna have a bad time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you French fry when you want a pizza, you're gonna have a bad time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well put.
And I think it's funny because years later when I got out of college, I was to make some extra money on the side. I was working as a photographer's assistant. And so when I'd go to his studio, I remember once for the first time I went to his studio's bathroom and I saw he has this platinum framed album of Death Cab for Cutie's Plans on the wall. And I'm a huge Death Cab fan. So I come out and ask him about it. And I'm like, you worked on this album? He's like, oh yeah, just a little bit. Like on that song, "Soul Meets Body."
The
producer came to me and he said he just wanted the drums to sound really robotic. So I just went through the stems and I just quantized everything perfectly by hand, all on a Sunday while I was in my underwear watching the Seahawks. And I'm just like, and you got a platinum album because of that. And it's just wild how often those artists will do those exact things just to either get a sound or just to clean something up. I think in that case, it was more of an artistic vision for the sound of the song.
Sure.
But all that to say is that it's so funny to hear that he got a platinum album from watching the Seahawks and just going in and editing things.
Quantizing, awesome. Quantizing drums.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Really puts it in a perspective, like what this industry is, and like objectively anybody could have done that, but it's like, you know, yeah, really right place, right time. Obviously has to sound good. The product has to be good, but it's just like a product at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And his product was dope.
Yep. Yeah. Just tighten it all up. So, but any,
yeah,
anyway,
we're on that,
yeah, go
conversation
ahead.
About your evolution of musical style. That was a fun tangent, but you got to the point where you were right. Like, I gotta play it all and can't cheat with quantizing.
Yeah. So I did that a lot, and you know, I recorded a bunch of songs. I wrote a lot of songs, a lot of instrumentals back then too. And then I finally got into like making beats when I was maybe 16, 17, and I kind of got down that rabbit hole of hip hop. I was really influenced by like Kid Cudi, Man on the Moon back then. And so I started making all these really spacey beats, not really knowing what the hell I was doing, but I knew my way around drums and I knew my way around some kind of chord theory. And then my senior year, our small little island, Vashon Island, was going to host a concert for Macklemore. And this is right when he was blowing up. This was 2011, and we had an opportunity. By we, I just mean me and a couple of friends had an opportunity to open for him, but we didn't have any music. So we just said, yeah, we'll totally do it. And so we just spent like the next month and a half just making like three or four songs, and I was the producer on. And that was kind of like the real intro into like making music and publishing it online, like on SoundCloud back in the day. And so then I also started rapping then, finally got to college, started producing my own shit by myself because I was just really interested in really pursuing that. I had always been writing music since I was, yeah, I guess 14, 15. And I've always loved lyrics. I've always been writing that kind of stuff. And that's when back when I was K-Rad, that was my stage name.
I remember.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was K-Rad up until a couple years ago. You know, graduated college, came back to Seattle. I interned at London Bridge Studio up in Shoreline. They're known for producing a lot of grunge back in the 90s. Oh, yeah. They did a lot of like Pearl Jam. They recorded Pearl Jam's 10 there. And it's funny. I went into it thinking, all right, I'm going to be an engineer. I'm going to run a studio. I'm going to, you know, get artists to record. And what I learned was, holy shit, this is so tedious. I don't want to be an engineer. Like, I don't want to be the guy behind the computer just editing, comping the whole day. It's incredibly tedious. And so at that point, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do this at home. And, you know, finally just kept on going with the solo career, started making more beats, started experimenting, joined the Death by Stereo Beat Battles here in Seattle.
Woo!
That's how I met Luke. Yeah.
Shouts out and, to Fuse the Germ.
That's right. And that's when it started really, you know, kind of taking a serious lift off to the point where I was like, all right, I can really start putting out some music, start marketing, having a lot of fun doing some shows. And it's just kind of grown from there.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious how you got, you know, into the beat battle scene in the first place. Like what brought you in?
Yeah. So, as a way for me to network, I'm terrible at networking. I don't like to go out and just meet people randomly. You know, that's that kind of Seattle freeze that I grew up with. I'm just not very good at it. So when I was about 23 or 22, I started a podcast called Hoppy on Broadway. And the gimmick was that I would interview people in the Northwest hip hop scene and we would drink Northwest beer, right? Nice. And that's how I met Fees. I had him on the show, and he told me about this beat battle thing, and he was promoting it on the show. And then I said, well, I'll send you some shit. And he was like, this is dope. Like, you should join. And then that's how I got into it.
Yeah. Sick. Those are good times.
Yeah.
Which
so were you, sorry.
I was gonna say, which Death by Stereo number did you get in on? What was your first one?
I think it was 3.
Me too.
Nice. Hey. Yeah. I think it was 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are they at now?
I don't think they kept going.
No, they stopped a while. But I think they stopped when the pandemic hit, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yes, fair enough.
It was kind of winding down before then. I think Feast had like run his course with promoting that event, it seemed like. And then
a lot of work.
Yeah, a lot of work.
For sure,
yeah.
For him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shouts out to him for doing it. It was such a good community. And it like really replicated the kind of community I would like fly to other, you know, cities and states for to, you know, to like have it right here at home. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so you said you were doing original music at the time as well?
Yeah.
When you were in that beat battle?
Yeah. I was I'd put out around that same time I'd put out an album as K-Rad like a year before that. And then I started doing the beat battles, and then I like rebranded myself as Kellen when I got like, you know, actually a lot better, because it was so much amateur back then. I still didn't really know how to mix, and I was really still polishing my craft as an artist. And so I was K-Riding a lot of the beat battles, and then halfway through all those competitions, I was like, all right, I'm going to rebrand. I dropped a single called Better in the Summer, put out an album that was co-produced by Jay Battle, hey, a.k.a. Creeps. He's the fucking dude.
You gotta get called Suicide. The podcast too.
Yeah. I'm sure he'd give you some drop gold. I mean, he taught me a lot just by doing some sessions with him.
Me too.
Yeah. And in 2018, you know, I dropped an album called Suicide Blonde with him. And that's when I was like, I'm changing my name. Yeah. And yeah, kept with it since.
So is that the name of the current project as well?
No. Right now, I'm just putting out a bunch of different singles. At the moment, you know, I'm still, you know, going as Kellen, but the latest like full length album was Suicide Blonde in 2018. Then I did an EP called Push Pull during the pandemic, and now I'm just playing that marketing game, man. I'm just releasing songs one by one, because that's kind of how you play that algorithm, unfortunately. But that's kind of the nature of the beast these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I was going to ask what's been inspiring you lately, but I guess that's kind of what you've been up to musically. Where are you like looking to take it, and who are your current influences, and like what's kind of the next thing that you're trying to do with your music?
That's a good question. I mean, I think I'm influenced by it's a big like combination of everything from my youth, like that pop punk stuff. Like I'm still really into pop music in general. I think it is so fun, and especially when you're an actual producer or an engineer and you listen to something by like Dua Lipa,
yep,
and you're like, whoa, like it's amazing the sound design and polishing and arrangement that they do. And I'm absolutely fascinated by that mega pop stuff. I wouldn't say I'm a bona fide pop artist or anything like that. But that stuff definitely influences me from a technical and like music theory / arrangement side.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, lyrically, I'm still into everything that I've been listening to my whole life. You know, atmosphere is a huge influence on my music.
Oof.
Yeah.
Dude, growing up, atmosphere has like so many nostalgic, just like moments in my life that are like associated with like a song or two by him. I still to this day think that he could be the best storyteller that I know of in hip hop. I know that's kind of a big statement, but that's what I feel.
Well, what I love about their music is that it's so like a lot of hip hop is super braggadocious, right? Which is fun. It's cool.
Yeah.
But he's like, so hella real. Emotional and yeah. Like he talks about how fucked up his mind with, and like, you know, I've struggled with anxiety and depression my whole life, and so it's like really cool to see how he like gets like angry with it or like real with it, and it's just like, damn dude, you're fucking sick.
Totally.
So yeah, it's a lot of kind of that vibe of lyrics mixed with like kind of that pop punk hip-hop alt style shit.
Sick.
It's actually something I really appreciate about your music is the pop aesthetic that you have, like the polish and just the cleanliness, even when it gets grimy. Like I really love the sound of what you got going. Like I always liked what you had, and like the more it comes out, like just like it just keeps going in the direction I like. So thanks, man.
Thank you.
So if anyone listening were to, you know, listen to a song to kind of like, you know, jumpstart their foray into what you do, which one would you choose?
I mean, right now I'd say like definitely go listen to Annie Adderall, which is what I put out a couple months ago with Web Wavy. That song is like just a blast of energy. Really, really fun. Really lyrical, pretty hard rapping, but like a really pop chorus and like a big electronic drop as well with like vocal chops and shit like that. And I say that also because it's like it's gotten really popular over Spotify compared to a lot of my other tracks. And I really dig the song. It's just like a lot of fun, and you know, it's good vibes. It's hard if I'm saying that to the greater audience. Yeah, it's definitely a good intro because I definitely have some serious or like sad songs. I'm like, I'm proud of these, but
yeah. So like, okay, so then what's the deep cut that if someone understood what you did, they would listen to?
Let me see. One second, I'm just gonna look it up real quick because nothing's really coming to mind off the top of the dome.
You know, it's deep then.
Dude, this okay? So we were sorry not to throw you off track, but funny anecdote on this. We were at Shambhala and basically Long Dock Short Walk was playing, and it was like the best set of the weekend. And at the end, like people, I've never seen this happen in an electronic festival. People like wouldn't leave and were yelling like one more song. And even like the sound guys who would normally just like shut it down, like let him play another song after like curfew was over, like full on, like what the fuck. And he was so shocked. He's like, like, are you sure? And then he was like looking up the song and he couldn't remember what the name of the song was. He had to go to his iTunes and you heard him like clicking around on his computer. He went to iTunes to remember what the name of the song was and then played it. But like, it was, yeah, it's a real thing.
Yeah,
it doesn't always come to the top of your head, even if you know it.
People think, oh, you know your music so well. And it's like, yeah, but I'm focused on the one I'm making, not the one I put out a few years ago.
Exactly. So what is it?
I would say one of my favorites that I dropped off my EP Push Pull is called Obsessed Echoes. Mm-hmm. And that one's a little bit more serious, but I really like the hook. I really like the lyrics. So, I mean, I said that would be the deep cut. Like, if you want to check out the kind of more melancholy, but also still got that pop vibe.
Sure. Sick.
Yeah. So I would say for me, just throwing this out there, there was a song that came out recently. I was listening to Release Radar on the way home from dance, and a song came on that I was like, oh, shit, this is my jam. I don't know who this is, but I love it. And so I just kept clicking restart on my stereo in the car. I must listen to it four times because I wanted to keep hearing it, and I wanted to be able to know which song it was when I got home. And I pop open my phone when I park, and it is Kellen, Misery Loves Company. That shit is my absolute jam. So I immediately like texted you or emailed you or something. I was like, bruh, this song's my shit.
I was so stoked to get that. Yeah, that made me feel so good, man. I was like, hell yeah.
That's incredible.
Dude, that's such a good sell.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. I was really, and then you showed me that video. You played it actually at your DJ set like a week ago or something.
Yeah, out of the window cool seat situation. Big renegade party in the woods. 60 people, $70,000 worth of lasers. You know.
Whoa,
it.
Oh, hell yeah. That's fucking dope.
Wow, that's
dude.
A good ratio.
Yeah, right?
You're going to get a lot of.
How much
you're
money
get
to
a
lasers
lot of
is
lasers.
That?
It's like $11,000 of lasers per person or something.
Yeah, $1,100.
Whatever, yeah, $1,100. There you go. Thanks.
Amazing.
Whatever it was. Either way, it was a good party. And I was like. Amazing. Yeah, I was playing like a bunch of fun melodic stuff, like some Closey and some Flume and some of my originals. And then I was like cutting through and I was like, ooh, need to play Misery Loves Company right now. That's my fucking bop, bro.
And everyone left the dance floor.
Said, fuck this.
Nope. Nah, people kept flowing their flow toys and everything. Righteous. I was actually playing at a moment where there was not a lot of people on the dance floor. Like, everybody had, like, just arrived. It was, like, it got dark. You know, people are still setting up their tents and trying to grab food and trying to smoke their first bowl. You know, and, like, the guy before me was just, like, whipping it on some heavy D&B to nobody. And I was like, new tactic. And nice. I was like, I'm going to play vibey, melodic, happy shit that says, like, hey, you can move towards the dance floor without committing to headbanging. And it worked.
Love it.
Yeah, I slowly filled the dance floor back up. And then Cryptochronica, our homie, played right after me.
Hell yeah.
And then he had a crowd and absolutely tore the fucking set down again.
Cryptochronica. That's dope.
Oh, yeah. He's the man.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's the dude.
Today, working on doing lyrics for a collab with him right up until the moment we did this. So stay tuned, humans.
I will.
Yeah. But yeah, man. Misery Loves Company is a bop. I'm going to make that the song of the week and put it on our Spotify playlist and feature it on the podcast.
Hell yeah.
Thank you, brother.
Absolutely, man.
Man, I really want to ask, because I love when people are passionate about lyrics, because this is something I was not passionate about for so long. And to now be understanding and appreciating lyricism, I love just hearing kind of what's your process like for not just for coming up with lyrics, but like, for example, I noticed since I take it more seriously, it's just integrated in my life now. It's just like finding the little pockets of time or like things just come randomly. I'm curious, like, for you, how has that process been all these years? Are you doing lyric writing sessions? Do you come up with stuff on the spot? Are you like taking notes randomly throughout the day?
Word. So, a couple different answers to this. I love to write and walk. So I'll either walk around Ballard where I'm at in Seattle and just put a beat on loop. I just love doing that. I feel like the blood's circulating, my brain's working better. So I'll do that a lot. Just kind of just whatever on my mind, unless I've settled on a song name or a hook. But like, for example, the song Annie Adderall, which I mentioned before, that came from me just freestyling a melody to like the chorus. And I just had like the syllables in my head, like, and I started saying Annie Adderall, I think, because I had watched Community recently, which is a joke from the first season. Yeah. And I was like, all right. I mean, I dig this. Like, and then I just started writing about energy and, you know, what's it like to be at a show, to be at a crowd and, you know, just getting crazy about it. And then in other times, like with Misery Loves Company, that came from a conversation with my mom almost a year ago. I'd gotten out of, I'd just broken up with my girlfriend. We were together for like a year and a half, and it was tough. So, you know, but the exact day before, my buddy had just broken up with his girlfriend of 5 years. And I was talking to my mom on the phone. I was like super sad. And I was like, at least I know that, you know, my friend is going through the same thing. And she said, well, yeah, I mean, Misery Loves Company. And I was like, ding, like that's a song idea. And that's, you know, kind of started that whole process of, you know, let's take this idea, let's apply it to me personally, and also try to make other people understand and feel, you know, what I'm trying to communicate. And then at other times I'll just, you know, jot down little lines that I think are funny or a play on words, and I have like my iPhone notes just of one liners that like I might go back and just take them out if they fit the subject.
So you ever think in terms of like structure and flows and like metaphors and literary devices and shit like that? Or is it just like, this sounds cool, this is a vibe, or like somebody said this, I like this? Or
yeah, like, good question. I think if you would have asked me,
the only reason I bring that up, and I love talking about this stuff, is because for music stuff it's really obvious, like, oh, I'm into theory. Oh, I'm into this. I'm into that. With lyrics, I always felt like it was super abstract. So, yeah. Like, I'm curious, like, from the technical side.
if you would have asked me 10 years ago, I would have been like, oh man, I'm so into poetry. Like it's, you know, similes and metaphors, every line, alliteration. I'm going to make these crazy complex lyrics. And nowadays it's like, I still hold on to that while I'm writing, but then I will edit the shit out of it. So it sounds good and it flows well. Cause at the end of the day, if you don't have good flow or a good melody, it's not going to matter. Like, it might be impressive,
100%,
but it comes down to the music, you know? I mean, we like fucking Despacito, that song, a lot of people don't speak, it was in Spanish, right? Mm-hmm. I think most of it at least, but everyone fucking loved it because it had such a good melody and cadence. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side of things,
Spanish, there are some bars in there that I found out when listening to it closely with the like the sub, you know, like the lyric video on YouTube, like, oh shit, you said you're gonna bang her till she forgets her last name. Bar. Hasta que te olvides tu apellido, Despacito. Yeah.
Exactly. Damn. And then on the flip side of things, you got, you know, there's a lot of like, you know, either it's like cloud rap, emo rap, or like you just any kind of mumble rap, or like the lyrics aren't like anything special, but it sounds good and it's creating a feeling, you know? So I always do try to make my lyrics mean something just because it makes the music more fun for me. But I will always at the end of the day prefer it to sound good than it to be like the most poetic thing. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think metaphors and stuff have been really cool for getting like more color in the lyrics and kind of avoiding a lot of that like cloud rappy style where it's just like, I've heard you talk about your heart and your demons and your blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you know, I think that stuff can still be cool, but it's like, music has been made for so long that there's just certain like cliches and tropes and stuff that I don't know. Now maybe I'm just becoming snobby, but that I just can't stand to hear anymore.
No, man. I mean,
but
yeah.
I also feel like for a long time, I just never got into lyrics because I couldn't understand why mine were whack. So having that kind of stuff in my back pocket to analyze it and like move more in a direction I'm happy with has definitely helped me gain confidence in lyrics. But at the end of the day, I'll still throw in a line that doesn't make perfect sense if it flows. And I feel like since I've started doing that, my shit's better than when I was thinking it.
I realized that recently too, like literally syllable structure and like how that relates to flow. Obviously it's all just under the umbrella of flow, but I feel like syllable structure in the flow of how you're saying it is of paramount importance and everything tears down from there. Like if the line makes noticeably less sense, but feels twice as good to sing or rap, like every time go with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it like as much as you are sitting there like, oh, but are they going to get the story if this is like this instead of, don't fucking matter.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like do the way that sounds good because sounds good equals catchy and catchy is memorable. And that is what people are going to latch onto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was an interview with Mo who was in Lean On, you know, with Major Lazer.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying that like they sped up the beat that they had to just start cutting out lyrics. And so The hook is blow a kiss, fire a gun. We all need someone to lean on. Doesn't really make any sense, but it did before. And then they're like, well, we sped it up and the syllables aren't going to fit. So let's just cut it out. And it's like, who fucking cares?
Do you remember what they cut out?
I don't. It was blow a kiss, something, 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 fire a gun.
Yeah.
Because like those don't really make any sense, but it's just
that's
kind of like
so funny because listening to it the way it is, like it feels like that was intended to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just so fucking funny. And that's like so consistent too. Like a lot of we all have those moments where like you stumble into something like that and it wasn't intended. And then someone listening to it is like, oh, dude, that is my favorite part. And you're like, yeah, I totally meant to do that.
Yeah. And like, you're like, I don't know what the fuck it means, but I love it. It's like, yeah man. And then it makes you sound even more poetic because you're like, what does it mean to you?
Dude, right? Like, that is actually a huge fucking thing. Like, I think all of us have a tendency to explain, like, in specific words, maybe not even like to the T, like as you get better, you know, you don't, he went to the store, he drove his car there, blah, blah, blah. You know, you don't get that detailed, but like you still give them the story in not so many words. And I feel like consistently as I get better at writing lyrics, it's always more left for you to interpret and like less like, here's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's like obviously so many different levels to this, like until you get to like Donnie Darko and it's like what actually happened? I'm not sure, but it was interesting.
Yeah.
Like tear down from Donnie Darko and like, you know, a few levels from that is pro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even my favorite lyricists as rappers, I'm just like, what the, like a lot of Kendrick stuff is like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like,
yeah.
But it's a vibe.
I think about like Ghostface lyrics where it's just like, he invents his own slang. I'm just like, whatever. It fucking sounds cool. The cadence best. Were amazing. Yeah. Like, I don't need to know. Like, you get these little like vignettes of like imagery and moment and contrast, and yeah, okay, there's some of those poetic devices you talked about, like the alliteration and the metaphor and the simile can be in there, but it's like, and I think that's why, like, I noticed that in myself as a young writer too, like going super in on like, yo, every, you know, verse has to, every line of the verse has to have the exact same cadence, or every, mm-hmm. you know, line I have to do this kind of alliteration, and then everything I have to have this metaphor, and it's like, it was just practice so that I got that tool down. And then, okay, cool. Now I have that tool down. I don't have to focus on it. I can just accidentally sprinkle that in my lyrics when it makes sense and not be so precious with it because I've already gone to the extreme.
Yeah. And you know who started that shit? Motherfucking Shakespeare.
Hey.
That dude was just making up words on the fly. And people were like, that's dope. Let's put it in the dictionary.
Dude, literally, we knew a friend in college who literally, like, I've never heard someone's personal dialect influence hundreds, perhaps thousands of people more than this one guy. And it's because like the inflection and the like the meaning of the thing that he, and it's just random words that like describe things. But as people understood the meaning of that word, it was just so catchy and fun to say
mm-hmm.
that there were so many of them just became ingrained in like the linguistics of like the entire friend group, perhaps larger, that like we were associated with. And it's like, it just all goes to show like the same thing, like structure and like catchiness. Is it fun to say? Does it roll off the tongue? Does it associate enough that you can connect with it? And it's fun to say? Absolute winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing too that I realized is like, you know, when I was doing the whole like producer DJ thing for a couple years, and now I do more kind of rap stuff, and I noticed that there was a phase, or like rap R&B, there's a phase though where I noticed in both kind of phases that people don't actually give that much of a shit. Like, yeah, you know, we sit down and like analyze music and break it down and just appreciate it for everything that it is. But when I think of my day to day, or when I go to shows and I see what the vibe is like when people are bumping these tracks that DJs are dropping, or where am I at throughout the day when I'm singing along and rapping along to these songs I love, it's so like, the digestion of it is so fragmented. Yeah. Like, I'll probably be driving to like get a coffee, and then every like couple of lines, I know when that shit's coming, and I'll say it because it feels good. And mm-hmm. then I'm back to paying attention, like what's going on. Same with like shows. I'd always overthink, like, oh, my drops aren't interesting enough. It has to be crazier and wilder. And then I realize that shows, they'll play like the simplest shit, but like, time passes different when you're fucked up in a club drinking or on, you know, people are on substances and all this stuff, or when you're actually living your day-to-day life. It's not like, like eight bars passes way different when you're fucking looping that shit in your DAW looking at it versus like going about your day.
It's also like way harder to get lost in music when us as producers and engineers are so focused on everything from the writing to the mixing. I mean, it makes it like hard for me to just like go out and find like either new music or music that I don't like overly criticize just because I'm thinking of it that way. Mm-hmm. Like I want to just be able to let loose and just be like, all right, cool, I'm vibing, you know, but it is hard. And it, you know, that's kind of like, I'm sure like, you know, chefs have a hard time eating just like McDonald's because it's like, well, I don't know, McDonald's is kind of great.
I have a hard time either way.
Good fries, though.
But yeah, but I'm sure like, you know, they overanalyze it and it's like, you know, they're cooking all day too. So they're not trying to think about it too much.
It's true. Like just like a chef has lost the ability to taste food without picking it apart.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us could say we've lost the ability in almost 99% of cases to listen to music without picking it apart. Like, unintentionally at like a festival, every song mixed down, picked apart, lyricism picked apart. And the new one that I realize matters to me a lot now, stage presence, picked the fuck apart.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you stand up there and are just the hubris boy thinking like you're Swedish House Mafia when like, you know, if you are or aren't, it doesn't matter. If you look like you might be a dick, I don't want to listen to your music, even if it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of that shit matters.
What happened to don't judge a book by its cover?
I'm judging it not based on the cover.
Hey, man, that's marketing. Like,
I saw the cover.
By stage press.
I saw him pop up from the DJ booth and go, oh, yeah, it's me.
Maybe you
it's
just me. Need to drop some acid and be like, I judge no one. We're all one.
I think that's good advice either way.
Literally, I saw the cover and then I saw the first two chapters and I was like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Like,
It's hard to ignore that kind of stuff. It's sometimes hard to separate the art from the artist. I mean, I certainly can't listen to Ignition Remix anymore. Not because it's a fucking banger, because it is, but it's just like, ugh. Now I'm thinking about this dude who's a fucking terrible person.
Yeah.
And I can't, like, this never comes on at weddings anymore. And it used to be the jam. But yeah, I mean, that is a big part of it, I think.
Yeah, man. It's like, speaking of that, like, how, you know, in your artistry, you know, clearly you're sitting behind in the studio at the laptop behind the mic, you know, engineering your stuff, like making this happen. But like, have you gotten your music out? Like, have you been able to get your music out past these beat battles, like into the world? And like, what kind of impact do you want to make in a live show? Like, how do you want people to see you as an artist?
I mean, I definitely have, and it's always, you know, it's a grind. That's marketing, right? It's about creating a feeling, something that people can believe in. And that shit's hard. And you know, I always have a great time performing, and I'm going to get back into performing soon. But since the pandemic, a lot of my bandmates, who play the live instrumentation had either left town or quit playing or something or another. But definitely trying to get to that point. I think, you know, it is still like 50% marketing though, which fucking sucks, because I would much, much rather make it 100% just craft, because it's addicting. It's super fun, super gratifying. But that's just the name of the game, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's true for anyone in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, I definitely, you know, that's also why I started doing like these Ableton like quick tips on Instagram, because as long as I can get people in front of people, there's a chance that they're going to listen. And if they're going to listen, there's a chance they're going to become a fan, you know? And that is, you know, a lot of the work, but it is what it is. And you got to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Amen. And then as far as like, live shows, we're talking about, like, you know, how people come off on stage, like what kind of message they're sending. Some people, oh man, everybody look at me, I'm the coolest, and that can mm-hmm. that might turn people on or off of your music. Or you might I'm working on not judging people in general, but I definitely see myself judging the DJ that, like, makes no eye contact with the crowd and does not move, and it's just like,
right,
it's like, dude, yeah. Come on, man. Yeah. Like, be here.
Yeah, be present.
We're all here for you. Why aren't you here for us?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, when you get on stage, like, what does your live show look like? What do you want to leave people with in a live situation?
So I think that when it comes to that, like I said earlier, I grew up in band, drumline, percussion ensemble, and I was in a school, high school, that took it really seriously. And we competed, like, in state and shit like that. And our leader, like our team leader, he was super, super diligent, super, super serious. He was just a kid, same age as me, but he took it more serious than anyone I've ever known as far as percussion goes. And so we grew up learning a lot from him about how to be incredibly diligent, how to look, how to perform. And what I've taken from that is just to be as technically on point as possible, but at the same time, the showmanship of it, making sure it looks like you're having a good time.
Yeah, that's
because
huge.
Energy is so contagious. And that's kind of like the big reason why I want to perform with a live band almost exclusively, because I've been to these rap shows where it's just the DJ and the rapper, and I don't know their songs. You know, it's a lot of local shit. And I'm just like, this is not super fun. Like, I can't even understand what you're saying. You know, the mix is there, but I don't know this music. I don't know these lyrics. But when you actually, if someone's giving energy, like, I went to Freddie Gibbs a few years ago when he was at Numos. And I only know him from his Pinata album. But my homie was like, yo, let's go. And I'm like, hell yeah. And he was so good on stage. Mm. I didn't need to know any of the songs he was playing. I knew two songs the whole night that he played, but he fucking tore it up just because he had so much energy and just technicality and just so much fun. So when I get on stage, I'm just trying to have fun. I'm just trying to make people have fun, trying to vibe off them, trying to get them into it without sacrificing, like, the quality and the sound and the actual performance aspect to it.
Yeah.
Man.
I was going to say, I think a couple of things that I've noticed on this note that are, like, of, like, paramount importance, authenticity, number one. Like, whatever defines you, like, as, like, a person, whatever feels natural for you to do on stage, like, do that.
Yeah.
Because people feel it. Mm-hmm. And, like, nowadays we're, like, people are just so inundated with, like, just so much input. Like, people, movies, videos, artists, like, hey, look at me, like, all of the, like, so much input, and, like, people's bullshit filter for when you're trying to sell them or you're trying to be someone you're not,
yep,
is really well practiced, yep, at this point. And, like, even if you aren't the cool guy in your head that you want to be, just be you.
Yeah.
Because it, like, even, like, no one cares if you're trying to be the cool guy.
Absolutely.
If you're not the cool, like, it doesn't matter. Just be you, and people will appreciate you,
yeah,
for that, and more than, yeah, anything else.
And I've gotten in arguments with, no slight to a few of my exes, but they're always like, but you don't look like a rapper. And I'm just like, hold up.
Fuck you. I don't need
to. I'm just like, hold up. Okay, I got my own style, and that's how you actually do it. You got to have your own brand. If I started walking out in this, like, decked out in street clothes, people would be like, this music and this guy does not match this. Yeah. This is, and their bullshit meter, like you said, would go off the Richter, yeah, scale.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like, yeah, you got to be you. And the other thing I've noticed, and this is more like a technical thing, like, obviously, like, you're watching a set at a festival and you're just picking everything apart. One thing I picked up on is, like, the best sets, like, the most memorable sets, it from a DJ perspective, like, mm-hmm, you know, it could be bass music, house music, whatever it is, every single one, like, they have, like a signature kind of like bounce to their flow. And it's like really subtle, but like it almost never stops from like start to finish. There's like a bounce, and like each person does it differently. Like obviously it's an authenticity thing again, like what feels natural to you. But like, I realize there's almost something hypnotic about like a bounce that's like in the flow, that like they like all the heaters just keep coming and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this is actually happening. Like every single thing I'm listening to is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like it never breaks that focus from a listener perspective to have that like bounce that like carries you through. And it's like such a small, like nuanced thing, but I feel like that if you haven't picked up on that, like it could be something interesting to think about. Cause to me, it like, I realize that actually really does matter.
Yeah, no. And I think that comes from just practicing and feeling your music.
Yeah.
And believing in it, and believing yeah. like this is the shit.
Yeah.
You know, and not just saying it's the shit.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge part for any performer. Yeah. But then there's also, you know, the side of showmanship that's like, hey, I know you're hella depressed today, but just turn it on for an hour. And then you start to believe it, because you do realize like, oh, right. Like, I do really love this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Nicole, I cut you off. Okay. I was going to say twice,
no worries.
Three times now. I was going to give you an opportunity to do things.
What? Huh?
Say what you were going to say. Say your thing.
Well, two things. First, on that point of like flow, I've come to realize a lot of the times in the earlier days, and I wonder if you guys can relate with this, but I would switch my melodies and flows and shit so often, and I didn't even realize how ADD my music was. But I've come to find, and especially through going to more electronic shows and DJ stuff, although now it's heavily benefiting me with like rap kind of stuff, is that there is a point to not switching the fucking flow, is mm-hmm. the fact that you entrance people in it. So when you do make these slight variations, or when you do switch to a new flow, it's very, very impactful. But like, you could have the sickest couplets and just fucking back to back to back to back to back, and that's cool for a time and a place, but a song like that isn't gonna hit as hard. I found the shit that I love, house music, you know, rhythm, like dubstep kind of stuff. Every subgenre of the stuff that I like is just very like repetitive, flowy, slow changes over time. And yeah, I also noticed the same thing you're saying, Evan, where it's like when artists can really lock in on that and like find their vibe, it's like, I don't know, like I said earlier, time passes different at a show or yeah. when you're going about life. So like, maybe when you're making it, that song isn't as interesting, but when you like play it out live and it's like 4 hours deep in an 8 hour set of like people coming on, it's like, it feels very different. And like being in tune with that, I feel like is really key.
Yeah. Yeah. The motif.
The motif. Yeah. The motif yeah. is everything.
Yeah. Like, I think I was listening to this breakdown of some really famous pop songs of the last couple years. And like, you know, Billie Eilish's Bad Guy, the whole thing, all the verses have the same flow. It's like, da, 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 and it just repeats, and it works, and it's still mm-hmm. melodically interesting. But that kind of commitment to finding that, it is hard, especially as a rapper, because you want to go all out. You want to fucking flex. And sometimes there's a time to just be in the pocket, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Ill Gates, our mentor, talks about producer flexing a lot. Like, oh yeah, I see what you're trying to do here, but you're just trying to flex.
Right.
It's like, look what I can do, as opposed to like, feel this song.
Yeah.
And like, that's kind of what we were talking about. It ties back to what we were talking about earlier with like, look at all the little writing things I can do in here. Like, look at my alliteration, lots and lots of alliteration, blah, blah, blah. You know, and like neat flex, bro. But like, what about just like how it feels? What about just the flow? What about just like
creating the vibe?
The vibe, exactly.
And that's definitely something that took me forever to learn, and still hard to find sometimes to crack that nut, you know, because you do have these wild, crazy ideas from these artists that you love, and you're like, maybe if I just do that right here, and then you shoehorn it in, you're like, well, that's cool, but I'm flexing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So, I wanted to ask you about like. Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, I want to stay on this creating a vibe for a second. Like, how do you go with creating a vibe in your music? Like, what's your feeling on that?
I think it always, like, first comes down to, like, the beat, you know? I got to really feel the beat to get into it. I edit a ton. I do a ton of drafts of these songs. Just like kind of flowing with it, feeling with it. And then I practice it a shit ton just to see like, does this work or am I racing through this line too much? And then I'll record demo lyrics and I'll play it back. And a lot of the times, you know, you know, I might even spend like an hour or two recording demo lyrics, just trying to get through two verses. And I'll be like, shit, like this doesn't work at all. And I think like, you just got to be really honest with yourself. Yeah. Cause I've put out music where I'm like, you know what? I worked super hard on this and I'm probably just doubting myself a lot. And then the song doesn't do too well. And I realized, well, I think I was kind of kidding myself because I tried these, you know, advanced things. Bless you.
Thanks.
And it's just, you know, you got to be honest with how do you feel? How's the motion of the song going? And yeah, I don't think there's really an easy answer to that other than just listen and do you feel it? Do you like it? Like, is this going to make your own head bop, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I feel like, I was going to say, I feel like part of that is cutting things out, like killing puppies, you know? It's like, okay, you got this cute little puppy of a lyric or a thing you did in the beat or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but if I take it out, it flows better. Just
I
like,
love it.
Just
I like killing puppies. Lyrics. Absolutely.
Like, you gotta like take out the words that are just like flows.
Watch out for PETA.
I mean, it's the only metaphor that actually works if you know what we're talking about because it feels like that.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
It's so hard to get rid of that thing you worked so hard on, thought so much about, prepared the rest of the song to work with this.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you realize it's not what you need to use. It feels like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is wild because like there's a lot of artists who do layer it to the nines and have so many different sound designs, so many different things going on. And you wonder like, how the fuck did they get there? How does this sound good? But when I layer all this shit that I think is cool, it just sounds terrible. And I think it's all about just kind of, you know, you just gotta, you know, chisel at it like the marble it is and see what's actually gonna work and not, and then kill some puppies.
Yeah. And I think also, even with the most complicated stuff that you listen to, there's a motif to focus on. And then there's like the rest of the stuff that if you're a producer nerd, you pick up on that you're like mind blown by.
Mm-hmm.
But the average listener still has that thing to latch on to. And therefore, it would still work regardless, even if you didn't have all the extra like bells and whistles.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's such a good way to think of it, of just cutting out the whole less is more and just seeing, does the song still work with just, you know, the piano and the drums and the vocals? And if it does, then it's like, okay, then we're working with something good here.
Yeah.
Because people will still listen to, you know, the shittiest recordings from back in the 40s and 50s, but because the composition and arrangement is so good, it doesn't matter, you know, that it was recorded with one microphone in this terribly treated studio.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so important. That's just like that magic factor. You can't really capture, you know, any other way. It's just, it's like, you know, the magic of music, I guess. And kind of on that point, like part two of my question is, how do you kind of, and I know you kind of answered it with all the rewrites and like working at the song till it feels right, but how do you kind of balance that, like, not losing the initial magic of the idea? Because I also feel like there's a point where when you, like, over practice these songs and keep re-editing them and re-recording them, it doesn't necessarily sound better, even though maybe you stuttered less or the flow is smoother, or like sometimes there's just a tone that you can't capture again. How do you kind of find that balance with like not rewriting your ideas too much? Or do you just say like, fuck it, I'm totally not attached. I'm just going to, I know it's going to be different in the future.
Yeah.
So I'm not. Yeah.
I mean, like you know, perfection doesn't exist. So there is a point, I think, where you got to be like, all right, I got to put this out. You know, I've worked so hard in it, or I got to commit to this. A lot of producers I've heard in interviews will bounce down just a ton of tracks. Just be like, we'll just bounce it, move on. Because after, you know, there's a
point of diminishing returns.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. But I don't know if I have a good answer to that, because I totally get what you're saying. And there's always been a chance where I've been like, well, do I keep working on it, or do I say it's good, or do I just completely cut it out? And, you know, I think that especially with like Annie Adderall, that's doing like really well on the streaming services, I did get incredibly picky with it. I think I did like fucking like 17 different versions of the mix on that. And eventually I was just like, you know what? I just got to call it, because it's not going to get any much better than this. And I'm pretty sure it's good enough. I'm pretty sure, because I still hear the hook. I still like it. I think my flow is pretty good. And there was a lot of times where I was like editing and mixing the music where I was like, fuck, like I sound like shit, you know, but eventually I'm just like, I kind of have to trust the process, you know? And, that's just, you know, how it goes sometimes.
Yeah, I really feel like a lot of similarities in my process. Like, literally, it is, you know, it's the thing you need to go with just when you know. It might take 6 full recordings of the song, or it's the first one that you stood up and... But, like, you know that it gets exponentially harder to reach that same emotional place that the ethos of the song is coming from. So like, if you have to record a 6th session of vocals to get the thing that you think is right, you have to understand also at the same time, like, it's going to be even harder to like sound sincere with that thing. And like it's going to take more time. It's going to take more takes. But if you need to do that to get the one that you need, like you're going to do it. You can get there. It just gets harder and harder and harder. You just have to be honest with like, is it worth it to do all of this additional work with the diminishing returns to get the thing that I know it needs? But like, ultimately, and I think you would probably agree, like I won't shy away from it if I know that it's not the one yet.
Right. Yeah. And it also comes in terms of resources, and by that I mean time. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we are not, or at least I am not, someone who has the luxury of being in a nice studio with engineers who are paid to do everything at all hours of the day, edit the shit out of it, have 4 more producers who can weigh in, and you ultimately have so much more time, money, resources to get those things done and really polish it to that level. But we can't always do that, right? I mean, we all have to put the music out. We have to get moving on our craft. We have to get better and commit to it. Even if you know it could be 5% better if you spent 2 more weeks on it. So I don't really know. I don't have a good answer to the whole, like, you know, how do you know when it's good, or you have to redo it, or you have to keep on editing or re-record something. I think there just comes a point where you got to be honest with yourself and just be like, that's that. And I'm saying that as someone who has written, recorded, and paid for masters of songs that I haven't even put out. Cause I'm just like, you know what? This is not working. And I feel like, you know, an idiot, but it's also like, you know, it's a learning moment.
Yeah. So for the both of you, then, I'm curious, are you going in redoing the whole song's worth of vocals? Are you focusing in on less of the song? Like, for example, do you just like commit to, all right, chorus and harmonies are dope, and I'm just working on pre and verse? And do you kind of like break it down from like sections to a section to a part of a section? Or are you just like, if I redo the first verse, then this doesn't work, so the fuck it, let me just retract the whole song?
I think I try to isolate those moments, because yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm super critical, especially about the start of my song, because I'm like, this has got to hook people, right? They got to believe in it, you know, within the first 30 seconds, or else they're skipping. So I will like constantly, I'll really, really be critical of the start of the song. But yeah, I try to break it down. If it's working and if I love this hook, then I'll keep it, you know, and I'll try to fix it or write the verses around it, or, you know, I'll just put it on the back burner, you know, focus on something else and revisit it. Cause there's been so many songs where I've come back a month later, 2 months later, I'm like, nah, this was good. Like, I should have really followed through with this.
Yeah, that's the worst.
Probably. Yeah,
that happens for sure.
I'm picking up songs from a year ago right now that I was like, it's so far. I got so much work to do. I'm gonna just pause on this. Come back to it a year later. I got like two of them last night. I just opened up songs from a year ago. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna nudge this. I'm gonna take out that hi hat loop. I'm gonna turn up the kick. A little transient shaper. This song's pretty much done.
Like, yeah, yeah.
I was so critical of it. Like thinking it needed to be something it wasn't, and come back to it and like, oh, this is a really good song. I don't know what I was tripping on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sometimes time is all you need there, right? Like, true. I found that that's something that I really learned in this past year. Like a little over a year ago, I was like grinding super hard on a bunch of songs at once and doing as many drafts as I could, getting feedback, making my own feedback list, like boom, 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 boom. And I just lost all the perspective on all of the songs. And it hit me that, like, if I can't finish these right now, it's because I'm not a good enough producer to do it. And if I just stay on these songs, I'm not going to become a better producer. And what I ended up doing was, like, letting them go, leaving them. I said, I'm not even going to listen to these for months. And I focused on DJing and dancing, things that were actually bringing me joy. And I, like, gained a ton of perspective on music and the music I actually want to make and how I want it to sound and what people respond to. And a lot of the things I was trying to do were producer flexes instead of, like, just making it a good song. And then I came back and started making simpler music. People were like, oh, these are my favorite ones of yours. I'm like, really? It only took me 3 hours.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but this one's dope. That ain't other that one's a bitch. Meh. I'm like, that one took me 80 hours. Well, that tells you something, huh? Nobody gives a fuck how long it took you, how much blood you bled onto the track. Like, is it dope?
Yeah. No, yeah, it's crazy, like, how, like, the simplest beats are, like, usually, like, the best. And that kind of goes back to the whole, like, just cutting out a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's hard, right, to find that golden stuff, because you might have 10 different things that are, like, a 6 or 7 out of 10. But what you really need is, like, 3 things that are, like, a 9.
Yeah.
Sometimes just one thing that's a 10. On loop.
True.
Like, I think about it, so back to some of my favorite old school hip hop beats, like some DJ Premier shit or whatever, where it's just like, I'm thinking of like Full Clip from Gangstar. It's just that guitar loop. Bump, bump, the bump, bump, bananat, and then the scratch. And it just keeps doing that for 3 minutes, and I can't get enough of it. Like, why am I trying so hard?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Simplify.
There's always, it's crazy, because then we'll go back to like how there's some other producers that make just the most insane, crazy ass layered shit with, you know, A sections, B sections, all the way to E sections. And you're like, that's just crazy cool as well. And it's like, well, what am I doing?
Yeah,
it's crazy cool. But you also definitely see a huge difference as complexity rises in fans dropping off, which I'm not saying write music for that per se. But it's the reality of things. I love the most complex shit. I love breaking it down, all that. But like, who am I going to play this around, first off? And second, just like, who am I going to connect with on this, even online? You have to like dig to like find people that resonates with. And that's cool. There's something like really tight about that, when like you meet somebody and you're like, oh, you know this like obscure artists, like it's instant connection, but it's because it's so rare, you know? And it's cool to have that in your bag and do that. But I think for the style of music, you know, that we're all trying to do is like on the accessible side to some extent.
Yeah.
I feel like Evan's maybe a like, it's definitely harder music where it's more niche, but even within your kind of style, it's like you have pop tendencies and stuff. And that's so key to know as a producer, even if you don't make pop or accessible music, because you can bring that into your world. It's just a way of structuring sound that resonates with the most amount of people, but the sounds that you use are kind of, you know, trivial to that like core structure.
I think you kind of hit it on the head there. I mean, you are trying to get something that, I mean, as an artist, I think everyone wants their art to be enjoyed. You know, you want to be true with it, but you're not going to keep doing it if like everyone's just like, this sucks. Like, I mean, then again, like, wasn't it like Van Gogh was only famous posthumously, so what the fuck do I know? But but of course we all want to be validated.
Ready for this shit, son.
Yeah. And too, like when you were talking about Dua Lipa earlier and stuff, it's like a lot of that stuff I feel like producers will appreciate, like people who aren't casual music fans that get into production will later on appreciate pop music. But like, I don't know about you guys, but I hated on that shit before. And it was way worse before, arguably. But it's like now as a producer, as a songwriter, you see so much value in it. And it like, yeah, it's super dope. And yeah, I was just thinking about that when you're talking about Dua Lipa, because I feel like she's a great example of like just a wildly successful artist who has so much cool shit in her music, but it's also like no producer flexing, no singer flexing, no nothing flexing. And and part of the coolness, and even in rap too, sometimes when people just don't give a fuck about the lyrics, part of the coolness is just, I don't give a fuck. It's sick.
Yeah.
It sounds dope.
And that's like punk rock, right? I mean, like Sex Pistols were not technically on par. I mean, they all kind of sucked, but like they created like that vibe, like we were talking about. And people are like, hell, because it's emotion, right? You're trying to get people emotionally engaged.
Yeah.
And sometimes that has to take the place of something technically or smart, I guess, like musically, like genius. And it's like, you don't need that. Like
sometimes simplicity is genius. And I think this whole thing, like this question of, I mean, there's some dope complex shit I like and some dope simple shit I like. What should I make? What are you good at authentically? What comes out naturally? Because I spent a lot of my musical career hearing what I did naturally and then be like, nah, that's just that bullshit I do when I'm fucking around. I gotta make music like so-and-so over there. I gotta like make that crazy lyrical shit, like, you know, twist a million words a minute, or I gotta make crazy bass music like G Jones or something, where it's like, what's the nth degree of the most complex I can get? But the problem is, when you try to do somebody else that does something better than you, you make like a C- version of them instead of an A+ version of your own authenticity.
Yeah. And I think that's how it starts, though, because everyone, you know, I think I heard in an interview with John Mayer years ago, when he was like super hot with Continuum, he was like, you know, it's like you start writing these songs and you try to be like Eric Clapton, but you're never going to be as good as Eric Clapton, but you got something, like, you know. And then, you know, you start becoming a better writer, learning your own sound and being able to develop on it. And you're always still trying to sound better. You're always still looking up to someone else. You're always like, fuck, I'll never be as good as them. And it's like, that's okay. You know, you ain't gotta be.
Yeah. And to somebody, you're better than them because they don't like what they did, but they like what you do.
Yeah, true.
Some people are out here like, I don't even like Eric Clapton songs. Fuck that guy. But John Mayer, though.
Yeah.
It's like, it's all relative. And, you know, there's like that 1,000 true fans model. Like, you only need 1,000 diehards to really, really make it in the music industry. And there's 8 billion people, so it's possible.
Yeah, and that's like the whole marketing thing, right? Yeah. I mean, fucking look at Riff Raff.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like his music. I don't know about you guys, but
not
but great marketing, so, you know.
And he is very much yeah. what he is.
Yes.
You definitely don't forget Riffraff.
Like, I'm this guy.
Yeah.
You know, they say don't be that guy, but he was like, no, I'm going to be that guy.
Yeah.
That's who I am.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, just think of the most famous artist that you absolutely loathe and can't understand why people like him. And then you realize, well, I'm pretty hard on myself sometimes, but I can't be as bad as that person. And they're fucking famous and they have millions of dollars, you know? So the comparisons are just, are you know, double-edged sword where it's like, you got to remember you also hate this person and they're making it and they're people love their music.
Yeah.
And sometimes people will shy away from making something that they like because it's like something that people hate on. But I got to remind people that like, yeah, but the only reason people hate on it is because it's so famous and loved by so many people that it's in their face. So they got mad because it's not what they wished was in their face. Like we did a whole episode on that a couple months ago about artists, people that love to hate, you know, it's like, fuck that guy. Yeah. The only reason you even know he exists is because a million people think is that person is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, man, it just is what it is. Do
it is what it is. Yeah. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah. So, I think that wraps us up pretty good. I would love for you to tell the people how to follow you on the internets.
Absolutely. I mean, you can find me on all streaming services, Kellan, K-E-L-L-A-N with a period at the end. Woo. Again, that's K-E-L-L-A-N with the period at the end. And then on all social media, Kellan Rad. Check me out, especially I'm most active on Instagram. So check it out if you want any news or if you're a producer and you just might be because you're listening to this podcast. I do a lot of producer tips on there and have a lot of fun and a lot of people seem to enjoy them. So you just might too.
Amen. That's what's up. Thank you so much for being here with us, dude.
Thank you so much for having me. That was awesome. That was super fun.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, man.
This is a fun-ass conversation, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking the time and sharing everything with us. And definitely should do it again sometime. I feel like we could have kept going.
I could have gone for hours.
Pretty late here where I am. But man, I definitely would love to talk more. And I feel like it's really cool, you know, to have a producer, vocalist, you know, kind of rapper on here. I think those are always really cool because it takes a lot of different areas of expertise and I don't know. I'm a little biased. That's also
no,
why.
But, yeah, I feel you though.
I just love these episodes, man. Yeah, there's so much great shit to talk about. Thank you so much for taking the time.
And thank you guys.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I love going everything from technical to philosophical and in between. It's
Amen.
Great.
And in the way we end this every week, do it with us. We give them a peace. And a peace among worlds. All right, humans. Deuces.
Love.
Bye, friends.
Bye-bye.
I like it.
All right, humans, thank you so much for being with us and Kellan this week. Make sure to check out his song of the week. That's Misery Loves Company. And you can check it out also at the links below and on the Human Music Podcast Song of the Week Spotify playlist. Support our sponsors while you're down there, why don't you? Like Spice It Up Percussion and Foley Pack. That's me, Luke Rain, and Porch putting together over 2,000 percussion loops and one shots. It's a crazy deal. You also get 50 rack instruments for both Reason and Ableton, so you can work on the fly and make all that music that you want to make spicier. Dojo TV, that's where free producer live stream classes from the Producer Dojo Senseis happen. Those live track feedback, all sorts of classes. And we do this podcast every other Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Pacific. You can tune in. It's free. There's no reason not to check it out. And you get to see what the Producer Dojo is all about. It helped us get to where we are today. And our boy Tesco has got a Patreon channel where you can subscribe to get educational content, project files, behind-the-scenes footage, access to his Discord, track feedback, and even private one-on-one lessons from your boy Tesco. Go do it.
There's also the weekly download, where you can learn from our mentor, Ill Gates, in his private weekly group lessons and get access to over 250 more episodes in the archive for just $20 a month. It is a crazy deal, and I've learned so much from it, and they just keep on coming every single week. Then there's guest practices, where you can learn from Seth Drake at the Approach Institute. He's the best engineer we know, and your first class is free. They also have an entire The Approach course if you really want to dive into engineering. It's cheaper than any kind of audio school I've ever heard of, but it actually teaches you much better. And you can get the learn by yourself option or pay a little more and get some one-on-one lessons with it from Clint Moody, who's a super dope teacher and producer and engineer especially. Check out thehumanmusicpodcast.com if you need to find our socials, if you want to check out links to all of our sponsors, or if you just want to find us on another streaming service. So, till next week, humans, love you. Peace. Peace among worlds.